Hello, soundtrack fans. You're listening to ScoreNotes.com, Composer Interviews.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to ScoreNotes.com, Composer Interviews. We're here today with Christopher Leonards. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing excellent, thank you. Let's begin by discussing your work on the show for Supernatural. Can you tell us about the process of developing the score for the television show?
Yeah, the score for that particular show actually came about from my relationship with Eric Kripke, who's the creator of the show and a very old friend of mine and a longtime collaborator. Eric and I had done quite a few short films and had gone to some festivals together with a lot of our projects. And so we actually already had a shorthand, and when we actually started working on Supernatural, Eric's comment to me was to sort of make sure that the dynamic range of the score, you know, was very scary at points, but then also he really wanted to keep the heart in it between the two main characters, between the Winchester brothers. And so so when we really started approaching the score, he had talked a lot about you know, some of the Japanese horror that he watched and, you know, the original Ring and some other things like that that he was really, really into, but said what he didn't want to do is lose the emotion that a score could bring as well. So, what ended up happening is that we ended up sort of making this hybrid of an incredibly scary, you know, sort of horror film score, but also bringing in a lot of the emotion that a story of two brothers trying to, you know, solve the mystery of their family also had going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like it was a balanced attack.
Yeah, it definitely was, and I think that's what brings, you know, some real interest to the show.
Now, let's talk about the type of schedule you had to work with as far as the pilot episode and any work thereafter. What kind of time frame were you up against?
Well, the time frame on it is awful fast. We usually get locked picture, I mean, or not even necessarily completely locked picture, but close to locked picture sometime around on a Thursday, and we have pretty much about 6 days, I would say, to score the entire show from start to finish, including any changes as well as delivery of the final mix and everything like that. So, but basically, I think on my end, it's a pretty quick rush. It's about four to six days of writing, depending on the episode, and then, quite honestly, it's on to the next one.
That sounds like a crazy type of schedule to keep up with. What do you do to keep your mind fresh and to keep your creativity at the forefront?
I think the big thing for me is to really take each episode and look for the interest that each episode brings, because each episode does have a sort of a different mystery behind it, either a different fable or fairy tale or something of that sort, which I really can build upon. And so, I always try to use that as the impetus for whatever sort of specialty instrument or specialty melody or something like that I'm starting that week. But I think for me, the idea of really getting involved right from the beginning with Eric and realizing what he wanted out of his score and we really came up with a sound at the very get-go as far as what was going to represent the brothers and how when he said scary. You know, we very much went back to a sort of really creepy traditional string approach with, you know, tipping our hat to Penderecki and to the classic Goldsmith horror scores and things of that sort. So that was kind of what we went to do. And because we had sort of gotten that going right at the very outset of everything, it made it easier to sort of hit that week-to-week schedule and really make a difference. I also, share some of my responsibilities on the show with Jake Ruska, who also writes every other episode. And at first, I had never really never really scored a show in a situation like that where I scored every other episode. And so I wasn't sure how it was going to work out. And it actually has worked out fantastically because we actually get a little more time working with rough cuts, and we get a little bit of time to talk to the producers to really hone in on what each episode has to offer, and I think we actually come up with a much deeper score than if we were doing a week-to-week grind, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that must make a world of difference when the director is on the same page with the composer.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely, it's night and day. It really is night and day, and especially on something like, you know, horror, where you're dealing with scares that, quite honestly, if you time it wrong or if you over... overshoot or over, you know, or tell too much or swell too early, you can really kill it. You can step on top of a scare and take all the wind out of the sails, if you know what I mean.
And now something that's not so frightful, which is actually good news, is your nomination for an Emmy Award.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you take us to that day when you first heard about it, what your initial reaction was to that?
Oddly enough, I actually didn't know what someone was talking about. A friend of mine called and said, congratulations, and I'm engaged right now. I'm getting married in about a month. And so they called and said, congratulations. And so I said, well, I'm not married yet. And she said, what are you talking about? I said, well, I didn't get married. He said, and she said, no, congratulations on the Emmy nomination. And then I went, what? Because I had no idea. So it was definitely a shock. And I, you know, I couldn't be more thrilled. And I'm glad to get my first nomination on a project with Eric, because we've just been friends for so long. And I think we really have the same kind of tastes as far as what music and movies are all about. And so to be able to share that on a project of his is a big thrill for me. So I'm just glad that people liked it.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent achievement. And now that this is in play, what type of involvement will you have in the show going forward in the future?
I'm definitely continuing on with season two, which we will start in September as soon as I get back from my honeymoon. And then I hit the ground running. I know the first episode of the year, I think, airs on the 29th, which is on a new network called the CW. That's the combination of WB and UPN. And that's where we start, and it's going to be an even better season. I've seen some of the storyline stuff, and it's really going to be a great season. I think the show's really caught its stride, and hopefully we get a lot more viewers with the new network.
Yeah, that bodes well both for the content and for the musical output, because even when I'm watching a TV show, I always try to, you know, keep an ear out for what kind of musical score is present. In a lot of cases, it seems like television music is really taking a background seat.
Absolutely. I know. It's sad, sort of. I think it's not like the old days of, you know, Twilight Zone and you know, and all these amazing scores that, you know, that Jerry and John Williams and all these guys, when they were really in the thick of it, used to do. And I think now people just sort of want something that, you know, sort of sits in the background and doesn't necessarily make enough of a statement, and luckily this kind of show and with these kind of creative people, they really appreciate the value of music, and they appreciate how much the music can add to the overall feeling of the show, and so that's what we've done, and I think I'm blessed to be able to, you know, work with people who feel that way about what I do and what music can do for their entertainment, you know.
Yeah, and another venue that seems to appreciate what a musical score could bring to the table is the genre of video game scoring these days.
Oh, absolutely. They appreciate it, I think, more than anyone else, because you don't really have your, you know, tons of dialogue, and you don't have, you know, nearly as much storyline, you know, on a minute-to-minute basis. So in actuality, I love scoring games for that very reason, because a lot of the story is told by music, you know, much more so than even in a movie. So it sort of allows me to be an even more important storyteller than I usually am as a composer. And that's what I love about writing music, is making people feel a certain way. So in the world of games, I mean, you can really affect how people feel and what they do and what the player sort of is engrossed by, you know, by the scene and the ambiance and everything. And music is, you know, instead of being, you know, 25% of the equation like it would be in a movie with dialogue and acting and all that, you know, it may be 50%, you know, which is a lot of it's a lot to handle, but it's also a great compliment to say, hey, this is how important this is to us, and it's certainly, for me, it's very inspiring to like approach it that way and feel like you're contributing that much.
Yeah, I find that it gives a person's imagination a room to breathe.
Yeah, absolutely. And room to feel, you know, it takes something that's, you know, you're talking about graphics and pixels and computer chips and things like that, and the way to really make it human and the way to make it emotional is to add violins and horns and flutes and things that, you know, that really bring out the humanity of it and the play, and turn the player into a into a living, breathing character, and that's what music can do.
Absolutely, and I think the score that first caught my attention from your work is your involvement with the Medal of Honor series, and specifically the score for European Assault.
Oh, thank you, yes.
Yeah, maybe, I think it's known in some circles as Dogs of War.
Yeah, it is as well, yeah, with the original title.
But I got to tip my cap to you. That had the depth of anything that that's cinematic or anything that, you know, rivals a big screen feature.
Well, thank you. I really do feel it's one of my best pieces of work, and I it just all came together. I was very inspired by the story, and I was very, you know, in sync with my producers on that one, and I really thought that I had a common vision to what it could accomplish, you know. And then we went and we had a really great experience. We recorded that score in London with the Philharmonia Orchestra, that actually was the same orchestra that did the Red Violin and won the Oscar a few years back, and we recorded it at Air Lyndhurst, which is George Martin's studio, which is where he was the producer. So I mean, it's like we had all this great musical history and this great, you know, history, and we were in, you know, and it just everything kind of came together, and I feel like the score became pretty magical, and I think it really was something that could be, you know, that could stand the test of time, and I'm still very proud of that one. I had so much fun doing it, and I. Still one of my best pieces of work, I think.
Well, that's great to hear, because a lot of times when you hear a great piece of work, you always wonder, you know, how does the composer feel about that output? You know, does he hold it in high regard as, you know, some of the fans do? And I think with this score, not only was it its own original entity, but it extended the Medal of Honor series in a very unique and, you know, heartfelt way.
Yeah, because I mean, I think that was the one thing that was so interesting coming into a series like that had so much history and had really set so much of a standard for what video game music was supposed to be about, and Michael had done such a wonderful job with it and sort of had set this standard that you know, I came in and I really, you know, I was curious as to what, you know, what can I do to respect where this has all come from and respect the fans and respect you know, the kind of world that he had created, but then take it even in a different direction, not vastly different, but in my own stylistic direction, and I think I accomplished that with this score, and my hat's certainly off to Michael Giacchino for coming up with this this sort of world that Medal of Honor lives in, and allowing me to, you know, and then I took it from there and allowed to explore some other opportunities within it, and really come up with my own take on the thing, you know, and it's hard. It's hard in a world of you know, war and battles of World War II and that kind of thing. It's hard not to be moved by the way people, you know volunteered and risked their lives for, you know, for the greater good, and really, you know there was so much, you know, so much heroism and valor involved in that it's hard to not feel something and hard not to be inspired by that kind of a thing.
Indeed, there was a lot of heroism involved, and with this generation, everything is so fast-paced, people have a tendency to forget, you know, but with quality work and quality ways to help remember, you know, what had been, I think it's a nice touch to always include these types of scores with these Medal of Honor video games.
Yeah, I think it really, it's really a personality of the game, and it's really done with so much respect for the subject matter, and it's not a game that's just about shooting people. There's really a lot of heart, and there's a lot of respect for the Medal of Honor winners and that kind of thing that go into the game, and they're, you know, EA is very serious about keeping that very, very honorable, and I think it works out really great.
Now, in a broader sense, I've always been curious what the development cycle is like in creating music for a video game. Do the developers show you a level-by-level example of the gameplay, for instance, or do they base it on cutscenes, or basically based on what's best available to their time?
It's actually a little bit of everything. It's some of the scenes will be done, you know, cutscene-wise and that kind of stuff. And some things I see are merely in a script form or a sketch form, where they might show me an actual sort of animatic pieces of paper with, you know, almost, it looks like a comic book cells, you know, or sketched, pencil sketched cells, and they'll say, okay, well, this sequence starts here with this tank, and you move around, and then right here is where you encounter wounded, save them first, and you do this, and you know, they'll give me some idea of timing and say, okay, well, this, a normal player would take about, you know, this long to get to this section, or vice versa, and you know, and that all, it really all sort of, you know, it comes into play, and so then when I'm writing, I make my transitions a little bit longer, so if the player's a little slow or a little fast, it'll all make sense timing-wise, but things will still sort of progress in an arc across the story, and you'll know that the music will get a little bit more heartfelt and sad when you get to a, you know, to a section where you see some wounded or some soldiers have been killed and things like that. So there's maybe a little bit more freedom in video games because timings aren't necessarily like a movie where it's locked and set in stone. You know, you don't know exactly which frame of film or what frame, you know, someone falls off a cliff and dies. You know, it's a little bit open. So in that sense, it actually lets some of the music breathe a little bit. It you can sort of finish melodies and write it. It's almost a little bit more concert music. It's almost like an opera or a ballet even, where you can sort of let the music dictate some of the emotional movement.
I noticed that a lot of cues aren't as abrupt as you would see that in some other medium. It has a tendency to kind of finish things off, and I guess that goes level by level and cutscene by cutscene.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it works, and it does allow me some freedom, and that's one of the reasons I really loved doing the video games, and I think I'll continue doing it in the future because of that.
Well, that's excellent news, because my next question to you is, do you think video game scores may ever become as popular as motion picture soundtracks, if they aren't so already?
I think in some senses they are, especially when it comes to, you know, original music, original score, because in actuality, you know, I think it was the Halo soundtrack that's really just sort of, that really blew up and sold a gazillion copies and all this kind of thing, but when you consider how many people actually play some of these real hit games, I mean, it's just phenomenal, and I think they really do have a desire to keep that music even, you know, and listen to for pleasure and to remind them of the game experience and all this kind of thing. So I think, I really think it's going to be as big. I don't know if it'll be bigger. I think it'll be just as big, but I think video games are going to truly sit side by side with features and television, everything else, as far as, you know, sort of an equal partner in the way people spend their leisure time and get entertained. And I think the sales of the video games themselves sort of state that already, and I think there's no doubt that it's going to get even more and more popular as the new generation of consoles come out. And I think I think you're going to see a lot more video game soundtracks, and I think people are going to buy them. I think the young people play, especially, that's their movie theater. That's what, you know, when we used to go to the movies when we were little, a lot of their Saturday afternoons are spent playing these games, and they love them, and they think that they want to continue to stay in touch with the world that they're in for as long as possible.
The other aspect of it, I think it offers an interesting opportunity for up-and-coming composers to kind of offer them a way into the industry.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, my lucky stars and Steve Schnurr and, you know, at EA and all these people for giving me the opportunity to write so much music with such a fantastic amount, different, you know, fantastic, you know, set of orchestras and stuff. I've really had nothing but great experiences, you know, writing some of my favorite music that I've ever written for video games, and I feel like that has actually shown a lot of film producers what I can do. And I think, you know, it obviously worked that way in terms of Giacchino, and it's now to the point where it's kind of going back the other way, and, you know, and you've got Howard Shore and Harry Gregson Williams and John Debney and whoever else, you know, getting involved with scoring games. So I think it's all becoming sort of, you know, a way to express yourself and write music for drama, and I think it's great. It's been really, really great for me, at least.
Yeah, I do too. In fact, I wish they would expand this type of output to even novels, like some highly commercial books that come out. I would love to see music associated with the novel, and who knows, maybe one day we'll get there.
Yeah, I think it could be. I think it'd be great to do that kind of thing.
Now, you've told us that you will be continuing your work on the television show. Are there any other projects that you have on the horizon that you could tell your fans about?
Well, I've got a couple of things that I can tell you vaguely about. I can't actually disclose the title, but I got another very, very big video game that's actually going to be out on the next console, the next generation console, that I just finished, and we recorded in Europe, and that's a huge, huge, very thematic orchestral score, and all I can tell you is that'll be out right around the end of the year, and it's from a real big game company, and then I'm actually also doing another upcoming game for Electronic Arts, which is not part of EA, or which is not part of the James Bond or Medal of Honor series. It's a new game, and unfortunately, that's all I can. That's all I'm allowed to tell you on that one either. But there'll be two really big orchestral scores with really great themes and all that kind of stuff. And then I also have a comedy film coming up in the fall, an independent comedy film that hopefully will be in theaters sometime in October, November, called Sharkbait, which is an animated film.
Wow, all that, an Emmy nomination and an upcoming wedding. Your plate's pretty full.
It is, but it's funful. It's good stuff.
That's good. That's what, in the end, that's what it's all about, no matter what industry you're in, if you love what you do.
Exactly. So it doesn't feel like work. It feels just like having a good time, really.
Well, that's great. Do you have a website that you'd like to mention?
Of course, yeah. No, it's just my name. It's ChristopherLeonard.com. And I've got audio clips on there, which need to be updated, unfortunately. But we also have all the new news and some new pictures, and hopefully within not too long we'll have a lot more new music up there as well. And you can also get all the Medal of Honor soundtracks on iTunes, as well as the James Bond from Russia with Love soundtrack, probably within a month. So that'll be up there as well.
Well, that's excellent, and that gives me a lot to look forward to. I appreciate taking the time out to do this interview with us.
Oh, no problem. I hope the windy noise, we're getting a little bit of wind out here in L.A., but hope it's hasn't been too much of a bother, but it's been a pleasure letting you know what's going on.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and good luck with the Emmy.
Thanks so much. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye.